Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our pre-blizzard edition of the of our roundtable panel. Very nice to have you with us. If everything is to be believed, it's supposed to be a humdinger, and we're supposed to go out by a lot of flashlights, batteries, and sleeping bags.
And hunker down.
And hunker down. I don't know what that means. They also were saying this morning, reported, I believe, on this radio station, where they said that we should keep an eye on our power wires. What are we going to do?
Well, we're going to call Niagara Mohawk or whatever, the National Grid, on our cell phones, because if the power lines go down, our landlines will no longer work.
I don't know about you all, but I'm not going out in a blizzard power lines.
But also make sure they don't hit the house.
Yeah, well, I see.
There is that.
Epic is one of the, I heard person describe, potentially epic.
Epic.
When they start saying epic, that's really...
It's usually a key word for nothing will happen.
Yes,
that's right.
It's true. There's a lot of hype and nothing there.
Well, let us check in and introduce our crew this morning. WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, sir. How was your weekend?
Well, you know, okay.
Was it epic?
Epic, okay. Yes.
Well, okay, I haven't moved off this couch, and my leg is still up in the air, and it still hurts. That's the full report.
Okay. All right.
And as my great orthopod keeps telling me, it's a broken bone.
Right.
And what the unsaid is, it's a broken bone, parenthesis, stupid. No, she doesn't said that, but I think that's the import of all of this. And fill up the bathtub. I always think fill up the bathtub because if the water goes out. And then the other thing is that you gotta be very careful about making sure you have a crank radio. Remember that? Crank radio?
Yeah, I pulled out my crank radio.
They're very
handy.
Take
your crank radio out. And if you don't, well...
Well, Alan, as someone who has had my share of orthopedic issues, listen to your doctor.
Yeah, it's hard.
I know.
Because, you know, I almost came in today, and I'm not really ready to, but I wanted to show the flag, show the troops that I was, you know, raring to go, and my favorite guy is going to be Bob Sachs on the Medical Monday, and I really wanted to come in, but couldn't do it.
Well, we're way low. We'll all do our thing and fly the flag another day. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She is our communications consultant, and Libby Post is our political consultant. We have a lot of consultants this morning. This is excellent. Good morning to you both. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good. Doing well, thanks.
Wonderful to have you here. All right. So let us go with the big story, of course, which is the firing of 46 federal attorneys over the on Friday afternoon, including, to be accurate, it was the ask for the resignation of, and the only one of them was New York City federal attorney Preet Bharara, who refused to tender his resignation, announced that on Saturday morning, and about an hour later was summarily fired. And then, from my understanding, only two other of the resignations, correct, were not accepted, right? Is that true?
Not sought or not. Well, anyway, two are staying.
Yeah, two are staying.
Maryland and
Virginia. Okay. So, Alan, we'll begin with you. It's been, I almost felt like calling a panel Saturday morning because we had so much to talk about with Preet Bharara.
Right.
So, although a lot happened over the weekend, so we have a lot to discuss. So what do you make of it, Alan?
Well, first of all, this is just another example of President Trump's pants being on fire, as in liar, liar. Because, as we all know, he asked Bharara to stay on. And so I've already written my column for next week. It's got some stuff in it that other people haven't got yet. But what I try to do is figure out what is it that could have been led to this. In fact, I think it's possible they asked for everybody else's resignation just to cover up on Preet, who was really obviously doing something that they didn't like. So we don't know what that was, right? I mean, maybe it's the fact that Preet is a Schumer, basically appointee, and Schumer's been stepping out on Trump. Maybe that's what it is. Or maybe it is that a big fat Wall Street guy came to Trump and said, he's sniffing around, he's getting too close. You got to get rid of him before he does that. Do you guys remember, I hope you saw the wonderful piece on Spitzer, I think it was called Client Number 9, yes. In which they had the guy from, I think it was AIG, who was going, yeah, we got him. And I have a feeling that maybe there's some of that in all of this. And then there's the possibility, of course, of the Russians, because maybe Preet was getting close to that. Then comes the interesting question of, now what? And there are a lot of people all over the place who are running, yelling, run, Preet, run, perhaps for mayor, perhaps for governor, or the place that Andrew Cuomo is going, perhaps for president. Now, Barrera, we know, does not have an awful lot of people who know his name. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's done and how he's cleaned things up. But Cuomo's name is still much more familiar to a lot of people. But if he runs against him for governor, it'll be a very interesting race. I have a lot more to say, but I guess that's enough for now.
Well, and let us just say, because all of this comes onto the table because Barrera, just assuming that he would have his job for quite a while, had always put aside, poo-pooed, if you will, the notion of running for governor because he said he had his dream job and he was going to stay in it. So now the big question, of course, as Alan has indicated, is that he doesn't have his dream job anymore. So, well, yeah, what else is there to do? The other thing, Alan, I just real quick, and then I'll go on to the other panelists. Sure. But there was a line in the New York Times article that I thought was really interesting from Governor Cuomo, who apparently said, according to an anonymous Trump aide, that be careful of Preet. You know, he's a bad guy and don't trust him. So
what, well, he's a bad guy because he's about to put him, Joe, as you know, he's about to put his closest friends on trial.
Well, yes.
And they're going to ask the governor to testify, apparently. And everybody is sitting on pins and needles in Albany waiting to see if one who's already said he's guilty, and the other are going to throw the governor under the bus. So there's a lot there.
Right. So I'm asking the question of then, you know, what does that mean for the future, because these are things that we're also going to have to unpack, mm-hmm. is what does that mean for the future of those cases? And then Barrera comes out yesterday with the tweet that likens his firing to Cuomo disbanding the Moreland Commission. Hello, turn the knife.
Yeah, well, that, of course, was an indication that he might be interested in the governorship, which I certainly hope is true. Not because I'm offering support, but because I think we might have an election where we never thought we would. For governor, it might be a very close and important race. It's one other thing, and that is that it turns out that the president called Barrera.
Right.
Now, this is a no-no. You're not supposed to do that.
Right.
This would have been Barrera, we don't know why.
Well,
but he called him right before the firing, right? And now Barrera goes to the Justice Department and says, am I supposed to answer this call? And apparently is told by the Justice Department, no. The procedures are a president can't talk to a U.S. attorney, especially when it comes down to a specific case. So everybody's talking about what that phone call was supposed to be, but why and whether or not Barrera would have been fired. Right. If he had taken that phone call, maybe he wouldn't have been fired because maybe there was something to discuss. But when he didn't, then he got fired. Disgusting.
Yeah, it all sounded weird because he left basically left a voicemail. An aide to the president left a voicemail message with Ferrara. Ferrara then went to the Justice Department. The Justice Department said, don't take the call. So it's all very muddled.
Yeah, and if he had taken the call and called him back, that would have been grounds for him to be fired.
Right.
It's a catch-22.
Exactly. Exactly, Libby.
I do want to just real quick correct myself because the just to get the quote right here, but in the lead up to Trump's inauguration, Andrew Cuomo repeatedly told a Trump advisor in passing that the prosecutor was a bad guy, saying Preet is not your friend. And we should also note that Cuomo had denied saying that, but it has been widely reported. Teresa, what do you make of this?
Well, I think it's a couple of things that, first of all, what I understand happened on Wednesday was that Barrera was asked to take a case looking into some of the things that Trump was doing. And then the Thursday call came from the White House. So, but also Hannity, I guess, on Fox, mm-hmm. Hannity also the night before said time to clean house. So it's hard to, there's so many different things going on. But I think the bigger picture is you keep hearing the Trump people now over and over, and if you listen to Hannity and others talking about the quote-unquote deep state and this notion mm-hmm. that you have to get rid of everybody. And they're attacking the public service in the way that they attacked judges and the way that they're attacking fake news quote-unquote fake news in the media. And there seems to be, on a broader issue, this overall attack on all of our various institutions that I think is very concerning. And I'm interested in both what Libby and Alan have to say about what happens to the Calieros case. You know, what happens to
Todd Howell?
Todd Howell. What happens to those? And also, Barrera was looking into Fox News.
Right.
Right? Murdoch,
the sexual harassment cases and how they were
right.
So how settled and how the women were apprised of the settlement and all that sort of stuff. Well, Dennis Vacco, a former attorney general and a former U.S. attorney, was in the Buffalo News either yesterday or today, and he said, cases are solid, they're going to move forward. I'm not so sure about that because the administration is so slow in filling these appointments, and that was another thing we looked at this morning.
We'll get to that in a little bit.
It's like, and that's the deep state thing, clean house, get rid of everybody. Government is no longer really working, and so it'll be interesting to see how quickly Trump will be able to make an appointment, or Sessions would make the appointment to fill this seat. And they're not really letting the underlings rise up because they were all loyal to Barrera or anybody else who was in those positions to begin with. And so it's going to be interesting. I think that this is going to put everything on hold.
Now, we should say for the record, I'm sorry.
Go
ahead.
I think you're going where I was going to go, but go ahead, Teresa.
We should say for the record that it's not unusual for a new administration to put in their own folks in these jobs.
Right.
So that in and of itself,
not after you've promised him the job.
Yeah.
After you've called him in. The way, he ran on this. It was part of his campaign that he was going to reappoint Barrera. Now, why would he do that? That's a way of getting votes. So it's another dishonest campaign utterance that goes on. And then the question is, why do you fire Libby? My sense is that there's something there that really stinks, some horse manure that really stinks, and that's what this is all about, and that they're going to be told not to do it.
I just want to clarify, because exactly as Teresa said, so all of our letters coming in right now are Bill Clinton fired 93 U.S. attorneys in one day, Trump fired 46. So that is the, but when we talk about Preet's case is really interesting, as Alan just outlined.
Because he promised him his job.
He promises him a job. He puts him out in front of the cameras down in the lobby of Trump Tower and says, I'm going forward. I'm moving forward. Right. And by the way, and also had talked to Jeff Sessions, who was then the
assumed
Attorney General, mm-hmm. now the Attorney General, and that it apparently seemed right. to be a done deal.
Right. It's again, it's not unusual that these folks lose their jobs. Although I thought I was reminded of the Morgenthau case.
Yeah, that
where,
was great.
Yep. Me too.
He just said that he wasn't leaving and ended up staying for a year, almost a year, and then ultimately was fired. But so in general, it's not unusual. It's the mechanism, or the how it happened, and Bharara in particular, as Alan, you can speak more to.
Well, and also it the whole thing just seemed quite in disarray. But as Alan said, you know, was this on the radar, say, on Monday of last week?
And the other thing was,
the president.
Was it on Bharara's radar too? Because all of a sudden, a few weeks ago, he started his own personal Twitter, and he tweeted. I think it was March 6th or March 7th. Mm-hmm.
Did you? 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, he tweeted. He was at a hearing where on folks getting fired for political firing. So it is interesting what he might have known or anticipated was coming.
Alan, you were going to say.
Well, he could run for mayor, he could run for governor, he could run for president. I certainly hope he does not, you know, he made a lot of news on WAMC when he came on for that 1 hour conversation we had with him and sold out to Linda, if you guys remember that. We didn't charge
great
for it,
conversation.
But Linda was, yeah, and he said, he was quoting Springsteen, and he said, I wasn't born to run. And the New York Times said, and he intimated to one of our people that he wasn't going to do it. I thought, you know, the great quote, and it's showing up all over the place, and WMC getting a lot of credit for it, for having asked that question and gotten that answer, but not in the New York Times.
Now, what about going with the AG? Any reason why he might do that, Alan?
What do you mean going with the AG? What do you mean by that?
Join the AG's office.
No, you mean our AG Schneiderman's office?
Yeah.
Well, Schneiderman has been terrific on all of this stuff. Schneiderman has been right out there yelling and screaming about Trump when Andrew has not. Now, we don't really know what that's all about. Maybe that he's protecting the Medicaid money and whatever else and not wanting to alienate Trump too much. But that puts him between a rock and a hard place because Andrew wants to run for president and we all know it. So Schneiderman, meantime, has been the guy who's been out there really giving Trump hell.
We need to pause right there, and we'll come back. We'll talk about all of this stuff plus much more after this short news break. All right, let's go to some letters on this topic of Preet Bharara and the federal attorneys who were asked to resign. Yes.
Joe, before we go on, we're getting a number of letters correcting me, quite correctly, that Bharara was born in India. So therefore, he can't be president. I apologize. I had thought he was born in the States, but I was wrong. Okay, thank you.
But he can run for every other office, yes?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. So Bob said Bharara had a huge staff of career professionals who weren't fired. What do you make of that?
It's true. It's true, but are they going to let them do their jobs? And are they going to stay, and will they not be fired? Some of them are civil servants, they're not going to let them do their jobs because someone new will come in and decide what's going to happen with all those cases.
Alan?
That's right. The guy at the top makes the decisions about what cases they're going to go on. And so you're exactly right, Libby. If they fired him for a particular reason, for a particular case, because he was going after somebody, are we naive enough to think that because they're career civil servants, they get to call it? In fact, I believe it was in the New York Times. It may have been one of the other things I was reading this weekend. A career prosecutor said, this is a bad dude. He's got political connections. And Bharara said, go with it. Now, what was important about that is that there is an example of the guys sitting at the top making those calls and those decisions.
Kathy writes, boy, Cuomo and de Blasio must be breathing a sigh of relief, which brings us back to that question of what next for those cases that are before.
You know, I don't know.
That's what I really wonder, Alan. What do you think? What happens to these
cases? I don't
know
about this. On the one hand, if in fact I can't, I don't know why the president was protecting either the mayor or the governor. I don't think he has much for either of them, but you never know. As I say, Andrew has been very, very quiet when it comes to Trump, and it may well be that he doesn't want to stir the pot. And therefore, maybe Trump owed him something, or I don't know. But it's just one of 10 different theories as to why this happened. But if there is a contest, here's the way I'm scoring it, as the CBO might say. Okay, so we know upstate, no matter what he does, doesn't like Cuomo, right? No matter how much money he puts in, he runs against the teach out and he loses almost everything. So upstate doesn't have a lot for him. In a Preet versus Cuomo primary, who would win? My bet is Preet would win upstate. Now, in New York City, which is where Cuomo always does extremely well, and in the burbs, enough people know about Bharara so that they would, in my opinion, enough people would potentially vote for Bharara over Cuomo, and that could be the primary right there.
I also think the other thing that might be going on is, you know, Trump doesn't really understand how government works. And he sees Eric Schneiderman going after him, and he probably thinks that Cuomo can tell Schneiderman what to do. And so by getting rid of Preet, he might think he's currying, I mean, this is bizarre, but currying favor with Cuomo, and Cuomo will tell Schneiderman to stop going after Trump. Because he clearly he just doesn't understand how government works. So it could be one of those far-fetched things. Just crossed my mind.
I think so many of the other explanations. The one that I really like is some fat cat on the street got a hold of the president.
Yeah, so probably.
You got to put a stop to it.
But it's interesting when you think about it the other way.
Michael says, wasn't...
Go ahead.
Michael says, wasn't Bharara investigating the president's son's business dealings, or had in the past?
Well, he was asked on Wednesday to take up the conflict of interest question by, I can't pronounce the guy's name right, Eason, the D.C.-based folks who are looking at Trump's conflict of interest.
Well, Noah Bookbinder, executive director for Citizens for Ethics and Responsibility, was the one that sent the letter to Bharara, apparently. Is that correct?
Okay.
Okay. Well, at least
it's that group. I'm sorry.
Okay. Which sued, also the group that sued Trump in January. There is that. Also, Christine writes, while the panelists are, of course, correct that Trump has been slow to fill posts requiring Senate confirmation, ProPublica published an interesting piece noting the 400 or so level staffers that the Trump Organization has already installed throughout the agencies. The strategy appears to be to get rid of leadership, especially on issues related to race and gender and justice, and then hobble the agencies by forcing out or marginalizing career civil service workers in favor of potential loyalists who may or may not have the skills for the job.
Well, yeah, that ProPublica piece is very, very interesting. Analysis of what they're doing with these open jobs and the kinds of people that they are bringing in, and they're typically people not necessarily with experience in the roles in which they're placing people.
Well, and possibly what I said before about Preet Bharara is not an American sounding name, and is that who we want as a U.S. attorney? And Jeff Sessions has a clear history of racist issues.
Well,
so you never know.
I don't know. I mean, it could be, they could have just bungled this. I mean, this afternoon, they announced late last night that Trump is going to sign an executive order, quote, announcing a comprehensive plan for the reorganizing of the executive branch. Whatever that is.
That's Steve Bannon.
Right, exactly right. And I know we're going to get to it later, but there are so many jobs unfilled. I think that there is a, I think it's somewhat separate issue, that they really don't understand how governing works, but they do have an agenda.
But you do, and you have people who don't want government at all.
Right.
That's the other part of it.
But there are rules and laws and programs, and until you dismantle them, they need to be followed.
Alan?
Well, you know, I keep saying the same thing over and over again. Pardon me. Hillary got more votes than he did, no matter how he denies it, by a lot. He comes in with the most draconian right-wing approach to government. And so nothing at this stage of the game will surprise me. They had the Conway woman on this morning on all of the shows and basically saying, when asked to defend all of his nonsense about, you know, about talking, and she's talking about, you can surveil with microwave ovens and you can surveil with, it's just, it's incredible stuff that they're doing. And the 40% are sticking with them. And that is where it really gets scary, as it does. And if you look at the history of every single totalitarian regime that takes place based on the ignorance of the people who put them into power. And by the way, if you want my idea about who should get the award for the most courage of the day yesterday, it was John McCain. Who is now saying a lot of shoes are going to drop on the Russian thing. And I've been saying that for a long time. I think that's where his big problem is. And I'm riding on the fact that maybe that's what happened with Preet, that he was looking at something on the Russian front, and pardon the pun, and that is really it really is what is causing havoc with the Trump people.
I want to get to that too. Some very interesting comments from John McCain. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about all those issues as well. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the group this morning. We welcome your comments. We'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this.
Support comes from The Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tasting Saturday afternoons. SpiritHAUS.com. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, accepting registrations for May 6th Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers, I Love New York, and Ulster County Alive sponsors. MohonkPreserve.org. Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, offering over 100 chocolates, including truffles, buttercrunch, and sea-salted caramels, located on Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville. UncleSamsCandy.com. Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School, Ghent, hosting an all-school open house March 18th from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Tours, meet faculty, live performances, including Magical Puppet Tree performing Wonder Tales at 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., HawthorneValleySchool.org. And from Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, featuring primrose, seeds, soils, orchids, and eclectic gardening gear, 413-528-0166.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Reading from the New York Times of the State Department, the normally pulsating hub of executive offices is hushed and virtually empty at the Pentagon. Military missions in some of the world's most troubled places are being run by a defense secretary who has none of his top team in place. And at departments like Treasury, Commerce, and Health and Human Services, many senior posts remain vacant, as the agencies have been handed enormous tasks like remaking the nation's health insurance system. From the moment he was sworn in, President Trump faced a personnel crisis, starting virtually from scratch and lining up senior leaders for his administration. 7 weeks into the job, he is still hobbled by the slow start. Months behind where experts in both parties, even some inside his administration, say he should be. The lag has left critical power centers in his government devoid of leadership as he struggles to advance policy priorities on issues like health care, taxes, trade, and environmental regulation. It is an interesting thing, Teresa, to think that you have all of these things that you want to do and nobody to actually carry them through and to do them.
Right. It seems to me this is a combination of two things. One is that you have a president who has no experience governing, doesn't really understand how government works, the mechanisms of government. And then you have Steve Bannon, who, you know, really has talked over and over again about right. wanting to dismantle government, and Vice President Sessions also, who is no friend of government and governing. But this is where it really affects people's lives, and it in the global environment, it puts us at risk when you have State Department folks,
yes.
where they say other countries have no one to, no one to call, and you have Angela Merkel of Germany's coming here tomorrow. What level of preparation has happened at the State Department for that visit?
Will they even be in the room is the real
will
question.
They even be, yeah, right. And you have important meetings going around on trade issues all over the world, and we don't have trade reps at those meetings at the table. And then domestically, you have all sorts of... I wonder, we have this huge epic storm coming. NOAA. I don't know the facts here, but what level of staffing is happening at NOAA or FEMA when there's disasters? I read that they are woefully understaffed in terms of their leadership. So this really affects people's lives in ways that they don't know. You know, it's easy to say I hate government, but I learned this when I worked in the Congress during the government shutdown. Everybody hated government until government shut down.
Right.
And then they started to realize how it impacts on their daily lives. And over time, I mean, in the short term, on foreign policy and defense, this is dangerous. And in the long term, it's really going to be debilitating on people's lives.
Well, you know, on the local level, you know, you got these anti-tax people, and I work on the local level mostly, you know, no new taxes. And people are beginning to realize that means snow removal doesn't happen.
Right.
And that impacts their lives. That means you can't fix the roads. And when the water main breaks, there's not enough money to take care of it. And that impacts their lives. And I think that people will start to see. And yes, we will have that 30-40% who don't care. But then there's the 60% that do. And we see some of the folks who had voted for Trump having buyer's remorse and recognizing this is not what they signed up for,
right.
Especially around the health care.
I don't know.
We'll see.
I don't know. I don't know if you're right. First of all, you were giving us some percentages there, remembering that half the country doesn't vote, right? So let's remember that.
Well, that's true. And it's up to us to make sure that they get out to vote.
Well, you can say that. It's just that it's not going to change. Half the country doesn't vote.
Right. They did not vote.
A couple of
Sorry, Alan. But you did not vote. Party prevailed. Right. Sorry. I was agreeing with you. I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah. Then second of all, Libby, before we're... I know you're a lobbyist for the... for many wonderful local interests, like libraries, for example. But I do have to remind you that... outside of great things like libraries and schools and roads, there are some town governments that spend too much money. They spend too much money for one reason or the other, and people understand that. And so, you know, if you look just at our little town of Great Barrington here, we spend a lot of money. Now, I'm not objecting to it, and I don't mind paying taxes. But the little town of Alford, where I used to live, has a much smaller percentage of taxation than Great Barrington does. So we can't absolutely dismiss the idea that some towns, some local governments, spend money inappropriately.
I get that, but I also just need to correct you, Alan. The only thing I lobby for are animal shelters. I do work on
example.
Other stuff, but so, I just need to be clear about that because, you know.
Okay, but you don't lobby for I always thought you did libraries also.
No, I do
Sorry
not
about that.
Lobby specifically for lobby. The only people I'm registered to lobby for are the animal shelters.
Yeah, but you do work for
libraries, I work,
right?
Yeah, I do work, but it's different. I work get people to raise their taxes to support their local libraries is what I do. I understand what you're saying. There are times when local governments are, you know, spending too much money on things. But then when the anti-tax folks win and there's no new taxes for anything and then the roads aren't plowed and the water mains aren't fixed, that's when people start to recognize that kind of rhetoric and action is really antithetical to their own quality of life.
But let me bring this back to this issue of, right. Yeah, sure. Of all of these positions being vacant.
Right. And for those who are supporters of the Trump agenda, who really want him to move forward, not having people in these positions makes it harder for him to move his agenda
right.
forward. So, you know, not only... So some people might think, who are opposed to his agenda, might think, well, it's fine because the longer these positions remain vacant, then you can't move his agenda forward. But for those who are Trump supporters, understand that having these jobs vacant means that it's harder for them than to advance his agenda.
Well, look... We do know that there are some people who are surrounding Trump who really do believe in sort of chaos theory.
Steve Bannon.
And you leave these positions unfilled, and you have a certain amount of chaos, as you've all pointed out. But that may be what they're going for. You know who else is a big proponent of chaos in United States politics, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to guess? Putin.
Yeah, he's really benefiting the most from all of this.
You know, Putin is also, and we do know that Putin, who has been described by many as the most powerful man in the world right now, because he's been getting his way, a point Rosemary has made many times on the show, and has had an alleged line in to the president of the United States, who says he's a fine man, and has said it again and again. So said there's nothing wrong with them, and we do the same things that the Russians do, and all the rest of it. Interesting, isn't it, that that Putin, who is in favor of chaos, is certainly has to be a little bit happy about what Joe has just posed to us.
But if you want to have separate from that, I mean, if you want to have innovation in this country, then you need the National Science Foundation to work properly. I know people don't think about that on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, what if you don't?
But if you want to drive
jobs,
if you want to drive innovation,
are people. Let me just say one thing, and I'll shut up. But these are people who really deny the fact that we are burning our planet up. Right? Right, Teresa? They believe that we are not. So when we talk about innovation, I'll settle for just understanding what the science is.
Right.
And these are people who, you know, want to defund this radio station, want to get rid of the NEA and the NEH. They don't care about innovation or higher thinking or, creativity.
Well, certainly Vice President Sessions when he was a senator.
No,
Attorney General. I
mean, you mean Attorney Vice President. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I meant to say Vice President Pence.
Pence, yeah.
When he was in Congress, really wanted to pare back government. But this does affect people's lives, and it will affect the lives of his supporters, either in a detrimental way when they don't get the services that they expect and don't realize they're getting from the federal government, or when it's harder to advance his agenda that they were hoping he would advance.
Well, a big shout out to Joe, because as part of the roundtable, we've regularly had people on from the endowments for humanities and for education and for these other places. And Joe has done a tremendous series with all of these people. But wait a second. Do you folks really think for a single second that Trump cares about humanities projects or education projects? They don't. They just simply don't. They figure, by the way, when he said, "I love the undereducated," he meant it. He meant it.
Mm-hmm.
These are not things, Teresa, that I think he gives a damn about. In fact, I think he considers them to be dangerous.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he supports the arts or the humanities. But I do think when FEMA, Federal
Emergency Management,
when FEMA doesn't work for his constituents
after disaster.
Because we're
also talking about the State Department, right?
When the State Department doesn't work, right.
I mean, we're talking about key departments, transportation. It isn't just the.
It's the Defense Department,
if you will.
They don't. They haven't staffed the Defense Department.
Right. They're putting us at incredible risk. No state. The State Department's sort of empty. The Defense Department doesn't have any people doing its work. I mean, they've put us at incredible risk, and they don't care.
Think about the Benghazi hearings, and you know the 10 different ways they had hearings on Benghazi, and you know, not focusing, of course, on the fact that it was hard with the Republican sequestration efforts to sufficiently fund security at these places. But think about what they have done to the State Department in just this short amount of time in terms of not adequately staffing these places.
We got a letter from Holly, who says, I heard informally that Trump was listening to Sean Hannity's program, and Hannity, made the suggestion about firing the attorneys, and shortly after came the memo from Sessions. Is there any truth to that? Is a wingnut shock jock now influencing domestic judicial policy? I believe
Answer, yes.
Yes.
Yes,
apparently,
it's possible.
This is not I heard a rumor. This has been in every newspaper in America. That this is where this alleged, you know, conspiracy theory of Trump's about having been looked at comes from. It came from Hannity, and Hannity got it from some other whack job. So that's what it is.
Hannity did Thursday night. Now, where did Hannity get that? Who knows?
I mean,
Breitbart, the Breitbart story about
the wiretapping.
So where did that originate? Did that originate from, you know, some people speculate that Bannon gave it to Breitbart and then Breitbart printed it and then Bannon gave that to the president and then he reacted. But it's hard to know for sure. You know, sometimes 1 + 1 = 2 and sometimes
it doesn't.
Okay.
Well, they don't really care.
Well, hold on.
Sum is.
Speaking of time, we're out of it and we'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, almost said Rosemary, and she's not here.
No.
She'll be back, but she's away this week. And Murray's here as well,
apparently.
Hi,
Murray.
Oh, Murray.
Murray is definitely here. When Roselle left the house, I said, put Murray in the other room. All of a sudden, I heard tap, 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 tap on the door. Door flung open, and there was Murray. I said, oh, no.
Yeah.
And that's what's
happening.
Is there
someone at the front door?
It's like that BBC reporter talking
yes.
about.
Oh, that was so funny.
the kids coming in. Yeah. All right. So we have Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. So that may the makeup of our panel this morning. So let's go to the other issue that I wanted to bring up before the break, but we didn't get to it. So we'll do it right after the break. And that is what Alan was talking about in our previous half hour. Of John McCain, the Senate Armed Services Committee chairman, who on Sunday called for President Trump to either prove his claim that President Barack Obama tapped the phones in Trump Tower during last year's election campaign or drop the accusation. Quote, the president has one of two choices, either retract or provide the information that the American people deserve. McCain said in an interview on CNN's State of the Nation. Quote, I have no reason to believe that the charge is true, but I also believe that the president of the United States could clear this up in a minute. So, Alan, why doesn't he clear it up in a minute?
Because he can't. He didn't tell the truth. He made it up. I mean, I think that that's what everybody's thinking, and it certainly is what McCain seems to be thinking. And McCain has sort of given him a deadline in order to do it. But he can't. He made it up. When you watched, I watched Kellyanne Conway on 3 or 4 channels this morning. You know, it was astounding. Every one of those anchors asked her that question, Joe. And in each case, she obfuscated so badly that your head would spin and just can't answer. Everybody said the same thing. Hey, one phone call from the president explaining where he got it, one tweet, and you're done. But he won't do it, and he won't do it because he can't do it. That's the issue.
And in one of those interviews, she even said, "I have no proof. I have nothing." So, I mean, it seems to again be pointing solely to the president of the United States, who I think most of us believe, right?
Believe what?
that he made
him?
It up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But we don't believe him.
No, but yes. but believe that he made it up or that was, you know, it was false and it was not a fact as he claimed it to be. So at that point, how long does this linger on or does it just go away like the other investigations as far as tampering in the election and so forth?
Well, as my father used to say, you know, he doesn't understand the seriousness of the situation. I think that he says a lot of things that aren't true, and they are weighted in different ways. And I think he probably didn't understand the seriousness of him saying this that wasn't true, or maybe when he said he thought it was true. But it really is it's a very serious, what he said is a very serious accusation. Not something that should be said flippantly, as he appeared to do. And the thing that's so odd about this one, if he is right, he probably didn't understand the process by which one can wiretap, and it requires a judge's approval. And so if he is right, then there is a very serious look, you know, then there must be...
There's a reason.
There was a reason, and that reason must be very, very serious. So here's a case where
way too subtle for most of the American people. Mm-hmm. Look, Teresa, here's the deal. This guy, remember, is now President Trump.
No, I know.
He got there by misbehaving, you know, and putting out ridiculous tweets every morning. So he's saying himself in terms of power, why should I change? I mean, you're assuming that he wants to be responsible, and that's an assumption that I really can't live with based on what I've seen.
I think I'm saying that I don't think he understood how really irresponsible this one was until
he doesn't care.
He didn't understand how truly irresponsible, but Senator McCain understands the implications of this, and that's why it needs to be settled.
So let me flip this, if I may, to what Alan said earlier as far as John McCain getting a Courage Award for standing up and saying this yesterday. So the question I have, Alan, is why are more senators, both Democrat and Republican senators and congressional leaders, coming up and saying, okay, show us the proof so we can move on?
Well, the problem for a lot of these guys is that they are caught. They want to be Trump supporters and good soldiers. They can't be because too many, they put their fingers up in the wind and they say, see which way the wind is blowing. And right now, this is dangerous. They're hearing from their constituents. They're hearing not only from the Democrats and the Republicans one way or the other, they're hearing from the independents. They're hearing from the people who decide whether they're going to be in office another time or not. And they are now covering their keisters by doing this and saying you've got to come clean with us because they think, and I think, that at any moment this whole thing could come loose. In which case, they would be caught on the wrong side of the line in the well-known game of capture the white flag.
Yes.
Do you all remember?
Mm-hmm.
Here come 25 letters. You all remember capture the white flag. The idea was to drag the guy across the line to the other side. And they are, number one, concerned about their reelection prospects. I would like to think it's because they thought it was that he had done a bad thing. I don't. He's done lots of bad things, and they are silent, but not here.
Well, I think this one was even too much for Congressman Jason Chaffetz, who has put up, you know, he has provided cover for a lot of things that have happened in the last couple of months. But I think also if you step back and think about what this must be doing to the FBI, to the CIA. There's real work that they need to be doing. And, you know, there are a lot of issues in the world that they need to be focused on. And this is really, you know, beyond a distraction and a distortion. And, you know, it also distracts our attention away from important things like the health care debate,
mm-hmm.
Like the housing issues, like the fact that Angela Merkel of Germany is coming and what that means for our country and theirs. It's a dangerous distraction of resources and focus.
Well, that's always been their game. Throw something out that distracts people from what's really going on. You know, whether he thinks that this is true or not, and I don't think he thinks he's above the law and no one's going to get to him because he's president. So he really doesn't understand what that whole thing means. But it's just one more distraction from the healthcare debate or the other important things that are going on.
Right.
And that's what they do. They throw red meat over there and then they do something over here. It's their modus operandi.
Changing all sorts of policies and
right.
that we're not then focusing on because we're focusing on this. And not that it's not important.
You know why I love you, so much, Teresa, really, is because you are our policy wonk. And you really do understand what's at stake here. And you keep reminding us of what the issues really are. And that, it seems to me, is, as Libby has just said, the last thing in the world that these guys are considering. They are not interested in engaging us in policy at all. And you're doing it, so congratulations.
Well, I think that's where, thank you, but I think that's where a lot of people who supported Trump, and I've said this for a long time, that they're going to be sadly discouraged and disappointed. I mean, when they find out that, in fact, he truly wasn't on their side, and the facts are coming out now around healthcare debate, but in so many other ways, he is on the wrong side, and his policies are not only going to not help them, they're going to hurt them. And so if he can keep us focused on things like wiretapping, then it's not focused mm-hmm. on whether or not the water is clean
That's
or
right.
the air is clean or their kids have adequate education or they have, you know, all of these other ways in which government intersects with our lives.
Okay, but at what point does the electorate know that, Teresa? That's my question to you.
I think they're
at what point do they say, I'm paying more money, or I can't have health care, or my kids can't have health care, or can't that? You're assuming that this is all going to hit the fan, and I'm saying to you, I'm not so sure. I'm really not so sure.
Well, Kaiser Health News has done some amazing analysis on the
yep.
Trump care, looking county by county and how this proposal that's moving quickly through the House, and then they say they want to move it through the Senate all within a month, how it will affect people. And they've broken it down on how it will affect people in districts that voted for Donald Trump. And the costs will go up. And the coverage will go down. And interestingly, some of the counties in which people voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump, some of the more rural, more economically disadvantaged counties, those folks are going to pay dramatically more for their health coverage, and they're going to have less coverage. And they'll see that. Now, whether or not the Trump team in some way says, well, this wasn't us, or they disassociate themselves from it at some point, who knows? But if this moves forward in the way that the plan is structured now, it's going to hurt those folks, and they'll know when they try to get insurance and they can't afford it or they can't access it that it's hurting them.
And we keep seeing media stories about people who voted for Trump and talking about, now I won't be able to get health care. This is not what I voted for. I voted for someone who's going to drain the swamp, and they haven't. I voted for somebody who said everyone was going to have health care, because he did. Trump
the
said
promises he made on health care
right.
were never going
right.
to happen.
That's right. And now that's not going to happen. So, you know, I think that it's the independents who voted for Trump and some of the Democrats who voted for Trump because they, for whatever reason, they wanted change, are going to recognize this isn't change. This is more of the same of Republican disregard for people's lives.
And I've talked to a number of people who are Trump supporters and who really have hope in what he is offering and think that, well, you know, you people are just talking him down. Why don't you give him a chance? And why don't you see if these policies can work? And I think we need to be concerned about those folks, and Democrats and others need to welcome them in, you know,
right.
once they are and help them understand what's happening. and how these policies are going to affect them negatively, and how he was not telling them the truth. It would be great if what he said about health care he could deliver on, and I'd be all for it if he could, but they never had a proposal that would get to where he claims we would be on health care. But if he did, I'd be all for it.
You know, guys, I binged this weekend. You know, here I am lying in a thing, and television is just so universally terrible now. You really can't watch. But our colleagues at WMHT did a wonderful thing this weekend on
yes.
television. They had the entire 14 Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
And I watched it from early in the morning to late at night.
It's great.
And it was incredible because there's so many lessons to be learned from the way that Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Teddy Roosevelt ruled the country. They tried things. They didn't work. They came back. They tried something else. But they were always on the side of the working man and woman. I really don't think this guy is. I don't think he cares about anything except that cadre of people from Goldman Sachs, who he ran against, by the way, and others, I was dumbstruck as I watched this whole thing and thinking, hey, maybe the people at MHT put it on for a reason. And then I said to myself, nah.
Well, I know you don't watch a lot of TV, but last night on Madam Secretary, they had an episode about the new president, the fictional new president in Panama, and they were talking about Trump. I mean, it's really interesting to watch what's going on in the mass media now, you know, on the networks and on some of these shows, where people really are giving us a portrayal of what we're living through right now, albeit their fictional portrayal for their shows. But it's really something to watch how the entertainment industry is taking on this administration in the only way they can, and that in the best way they can, and that is by having these shows that just put it all out there for people to think about.
I want to just go to one other topic here, because we're just about out of time, and that is, but we're staying with this whole idea of give them what they want, and that is healthcare. And so Paul Ryan was on the Sunday shows yesterday talking about and defending the Republican bill to supplant the Affordable Care Act. It is facing criticism, certainly from the Democrats, but also from fellow GOP lawmakers. And the article in the Washington Post is, depending on which outside analyst you ask, between 6 million and 15 million people would probably lose insurance coverage if the Republican alternative to the Affordable Care Act passes Congress and is signed into law. Or actually, let's revise that. Depending on whom you ask in Republican leadership, the real number is more like zero or perhaps negative. People will gain coverage under the proposal. As part of the Republican push for the American Health Care Act, administration officials joined the Sunday political shows to offer their thoughts about the future of coverage, with analysis of the American Health Care Act from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office looming. The officials' predictions about the effects of the bill were far rosier than the analysis offered by the Brookings Institution, 15 million losing coverage over 10 years, or even Standard & Poor's, 6 million to 10 million by 2024.
I thought Chris Murphy was quoted in one of the papers I was reading this morning. It was a great quote saying, "This was a bad idea written on the back of somebody's envelope." Really, this is a bad idea. And of course, in their usual irresponsible way, the Trump people are undermining the CBO report, which we will probably get today, which will score how much this is costing. Now, remember, these are the guys who said early on that the election would be rigged. And I'm sure we'll say the next time the election's also going to be rigged. But it wasn't rigged, and they didn't care that they were undermining the fundamental precepts of American democracy, right? Now, they're already doing that with the CBO report. They're saying, we don't believe those reports and all the rest of it. But it's going to be very important when that report comes out to see just how much they think they're saving and how much it'll cost.
Teresa?
I think it's important. You're right. They are denigrating the CBO just as they have denigrated other parts of the government. But I think it's the CBO is a congressional budget office, and they are the nonpartisan arbiter. They analyze the cost of things. So when the report comes out, they'll be looking at five things. They'll be looking at the long-term cost of the plan. They'll be looking at how many people will lose their health coverage under this plan or gain. They'll be looking at how much it will change, what effect it will have on premiums, and so on and so forth. In any case, but it's important to remember that the head of the Congressional Budget Office is Keith Hall. He's a Republican. He was selected by Republicans, including one of the lead people in selecting him was then Congressman Price, who's now the head of Health and Human Services for Trump. And so while they talk down these numbers, he's their guy is in charge.
Do you think that's going to count?
I think that they clearly are concerned about this scoring. But if you step back and look at what the Trump Care plan is right now that's moving through the House, it really is not so much a health bill. It's really a tax bill. And what it really does, when you get right down to it, is give tax breaks to the wealthiest Americans. And it lowers access, and it increases premiums on people at the lower end of the economic divide. And Vice President Pence was in Indiana this weekend. Kentucky, and talking about this and denigrating the plan in Kentucky, saying the problem is that so many people are on Medicaid, that a third of the state is on Medicaid, and that's not sustainable. Well, that's not the problem. That's the benefit, because now people have insurance and they get it through the right way. It's a more expensive if they get their insurance when they're not insured and go through the emergency room.
We're late, but I'm going to have to give her the last word. But thank you very much, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow for another round of On the Roundtable.